Broadcasting across the United States, Canada, and around the world, this is the Best of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Your host for the program is Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because life and truth matter. For more information, resources, or to donate to CRI, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. To start today's Bible Answer Man broadcast, here's your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and we will go right to the phone calls. First up, Dana listening in Canoga Park, California. Hi, Dana.
Wow, I'm first up. Wow. Hank, I want to let you know I'm a regular donor every month. The CRI, I've gotten a lot of good Bible questions answered by your man, Warren Nosowski.
Oh, yeah.
Really? I'm really happy. Well, I mean, through the years, I've gotten so many good answers from Warren, and I just really, really love CRI. But anyway, you know, something that's been keeps bugging me is the story of the woman caught in adultery in it's John chapter 8, verses 1 through 11. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, like in my newer translations, like my NASB and also my NIV, it says that the earliest manuscripts and many other ancient witnesses do not have this story of adultery, okay? So I'm just wondering, like, did some scribe, you know, like maybe in the Middle Ages, like, add this story to the scripture? Is that the reason these earliest manuscripts don't have this this part of the scripture?
Yeah, it's why you find it, but you don't find it the best attested manuscripts. And I think you're right on in saying what you just said, Dana. It may well have been something that was handed down by word of mouth until some scribe copying the gospel decided it was just too good to leave out. But I think there's something else, and you alluded to this in the prologue to the question as well, and I think correctly so, and that is that the story itself is theologically defensible, and it's historically defensible. Its coherence, its spirit show that it was preserved from a very early time, and it, of course, accords very well with the character of Jesus Christ. So this is why it still remains in the text, even of modern translations, but it is appended with the remark that you mentioned, that it isn't found in the oldest, most reliable manuscripts. And this is all a function of what's called the science of textual criticism, where textual critics take the manuscript trove that we have, which is a treasure trove, and they compare manuscripts with one another. And all the manuscripts have mistakes, but they don't all have the same mistakes. So by comparing manuscript with manuscript, you can get back to the original. And that's what we have. We have the autographa embedded in the treasure trove of manuscripts.
Okay, I understand that, but if some scribe included this story, you know, I mean, it's not authored by John. You know, people think that the Gospel of John is authored by, you know, the Apostle John. And then if some scribe added this, isn't that like inerrancy in the Scriptures?
Well, remember that we do not in any way proclaim that the translations we have are infallible or inerrant. We claim that the autographa is infallible and inerrant. And by way of textual criticism, you can get back to the autographs. And so what we have in our Bibles is dependable, and where there are deviations, those deviations are pointed out.
I still don't understand, because, I mean, if some scribe added this story, you know.
But it's noted that a scribe added the story. There's a whole chapter, Dana, in my book, Has God Spoken, on the science of textual criticism. And actually,
I got to get that book. That's one of the few books of yours that I don't have. So,
well,
I got to get that one.
Yeah, and what's cool about this is I actually use this very passage as an example. I use some others, like what's known as the Comma Johannium and others that are noted. So, yeah, this is one of the examples that I, in particular, note and write about.
Yeah, I'm gonna get that book, and I'll have to like read that. But okay, thank you very much for your input on this. I know you got other callers.
And thank you for your kind words. I know Warren in particular will appreciate what you said.
Yeah. Oh man, he is great. I've asked him so many questions down through the years, through either the mail or through email, and he just comes up with my goodness. I ask him a simple little question, and he gives me like 2, 3, 4 pages of answers and references on it. So I'm really so happy with CRI. So God bless you guys. God bless your work, and I'll definitely be a supporter of yours. Okay.
Thank you, Dana. And there are many like Warren who are working at the Christian Research Institute selflessly and making a difference not only for time but also for eternity. So often questions come in, not just from people like Dana, who is a supporter of the ministry, as he just mentioned, but people who are skeptics, and they want reliable answers. And sometimes this becomes a springboard, the answers I'm talking about, becomes a springboard for them seriously considering the historic Christian faith. And so one of the many outreach ministries of the Christian Research Institute bearing abundant abiding fruit, not only for time, but also for eternity. I want to go back to the phone lines, talk to Matthew, listening in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, Hank. I'm a new time listener. I just discovered your show about a month ago.
Oh, wonderful.
But I really appreciate it, and it's really been insightful. I have a two-part question, pretty much related, but I was curious, when did Jesus realize he was the Christ, and at the same time, what between his birth and when he started ministering at 30, what was going on in between there? And I mean, I know that Mary and Joseph, obviously, they knew he was the Messiah, but I heard that his brothers might not have really believed him at certain points, and so I was just kind of curious how you felt about that.
Yeah, in fact, his family members were embarrassed by everything that Jesus Christ said, and that changed substantially when Jesus Christ appeared in his post-resurrection appearances, and when he did, there was an utter transformation that took place. For example, James, he was, again, embarrassed, but when he saw Christ risen from the dead, he became the leader of the Jerusalem church and calls himself a bondservant of Jesus Christ and ultimately is martyred. Only the resurrection of Jesus Christ, of course, can account for that. But in terms of his own self-awareness, remember Jesus Christ was one person with two natures, 100% human, 100% divine. So while his divine nature voluntarily veiled the prerogatives of divinity, he was not divested of a single ounce of knowledge. He would know all things. From his human nature, however, we can only speculate when he had a self-awareness. But certainly it was long before the time that he was 30 years of age. In fact, Jesus at the temple is a great example that at age 12, he already had self-awareness as Messiah. So he was at the temple at the feast of the Passover. He was 12 years old, and he went up to the feast according to the custom. And after the feast, his parents were returning home, but Jesus stayed in Jerusalem, and they were totally unaware of it. They thought he was in their company. And they began traveling, and they had traveled for a day. And when they began looking for him among their relatives and friends, they didn't find him. So they went back to Jerusalem, and after 3 days, they found him in the temple courts. Catch this. He's 12 years of age. He's in the temple courts. He's sitting among the teachers of the law, and he's listening to them, and then he's asking them questions. And everyone hearing him engage the teachers of the law were utterly perplexed and amazed. Why? Because he had a thorough understanding at age 12, and he had answers to questions that they didn't have answers to. So already he knew, because when his parents were looking for him, his response to his parents are, "Why were you looking for me? Didn't you know I had to be in my Father's house?" And they didn't understand what he was saying to them until later on.
Is there anything else between 12 and 30 that he, you know, there's a record of?
Well, we don't have any record whatsoever, as I said, about when he came to a self-awareness from the perspective of his humanity, of his own deity. We would have to speculate on that, and all such speculation is fruitless. But what I can tell you is there are glimpses that would tell us that even before age 12, he didn't suddenly at age 12 come to self-awareness, but certainly before age 12, he was self-aware, and exactly when that took place, we can't say.
Well, I appreciate the answer, and God bless you, Hank. I really like you. I love listening to you at night.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Wonderful for you to call in today. We'll be back on the other side of the break with more answers to your questions, so please don't touch that dial.
Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal. Just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. Hank will be back after this.
In the new book, The Cross Before Me, Pastor Rankin Wilborn and philosopher Brian Greger offer a provocative perspective on why the cross is not just the way to salvation, but the way to the abundant life. Drawing on biblical truth and historical writings, they ask, why do we still feel restless when things seem to be going our way? How can suffering bring more peace than success brings? And what does Jesus' cross teach us about how to live a full and flourishing life? This unique book helps us reimagine the good life as we learn to delight in surrendering our own power and embracing the life-giving weakness of the cross. Be sure to read The Cross Before Me. To receive your copy, call 888-7000-CRI and support the life-changing work of the Christian Research Institute. That's 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org.
Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. The famous British apologist G.K. Chesterton once noted, "The true soldier fights not because he hates what is in front of him, but because he loves what is behind him." Because at CRI we love what is behind us, our faith, our families, and our freedoms, we will never retreat quietly from the growing assaults on life and truth. Even when the costs are great, we will stand. To join like-minded friends in making a difference at home and around the globe, and to equip fellow believers to stand their ground courageously, become a member of CRI's support team. Simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website at equip.org. Here again is CRI President Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Right back to our phone callers. Next up is Scott, who's listening in Tennessee on the web. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Hank. First of all, I just want to say that I love you. I think you are a treasure of Christianity, and your ministry is great. I've listened to you for about 20 years now. I do have a question for you about Oneness Pentecostalism. I know that we do divide over some essentials. I believe the Trinity is an essential. But let's say someone is on their deathbed or they come to know Jesus and they decide they want to follow him, but perhaps they don't understand and or reject the idea of a Trinity. Is that a salvation issue?
Well, I don't think it's the absence of truth that damns, but it most certainly is the despising of truth that damns. And if you look at Oneness Pentecostals, they believe that if you hold to the Trinity, then you hold to pagan polytheistic theology. In fact, they are very much tied to keeping certain works in play, including being able to speak in tongues, which has placed tremendous socio-psychological pressure on adherents to conjure up the gift of tongues, because those who do not speak in tongues are thought to be lacking in faith or even to be entirely unrepentant. So the Oneness Pentecostals themselves have separated their theology from the rest of Christianity, and that's why the Assemblies of God, the principal Pentecostal denomination in the world, called them heretical from the outset.
Okay. So if someone believes in Jesus and they just don't get Trinity yet, that's not an issue. But if they have had the Trinity revealed to them and they reject it, that is an issue.
Yeah, I think what we want to do is be followers of the one God who has revealed himself in Scripture. And as you follow that one God, you learn more and more about him. And none of us exhaust that. I only apprehend certain things about God. And for the rest of eternity, I will be learning things about God. So this is not about having exhaustive knowledge, but it is not proper to despise the knowledge that we're given. So if the Bible's very, very clear about one God revealed in three persons eternally distinct, while we can't comprehend that, when we apprehend that, if we despise it, then we're despising the true God who has revealed himself.
All right. Well, thank you for your time, Hank.
You got it. Thank you so much for your call. We'll go back to the phone lines. Talk to Lewis. He's listening in Jersey City, New Jersey. Hi, Lewis.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
Thank you for all you've been doing. 2 days ago, I got into a conversation with someone in my class. It was a principles of biology class at college, and we got into a discussion regarding, through a game actually, Fallout 4, into absolute truths. And he kept on, it seems he was giving a skeptic's answer, and I wanted to ask you how to stop someone going to loops of saying, I don't know, and to actually trying to talk to him about absolute truths.
That's a very essential issue, isn't it? Because today, truth is no longer regarded as absolute. It becomes relativized. And if that is true, truth is now determined by the size and the scope of the latest lobby group. And with no enduring reference point, societal norms are quickly reduced to mere matters of preference. And this is the issue that Christianity is harping on, the fact that there is a North Star, there is a lawgiver, And that lawgiver is also our designer. And to violate his commands, his truth, is kind of like trying to violate the law of gravity by standing on the Eiffel Tower and jumping and saying, I am dismissing for the next 30 seconds the law of gravity. Well, the only thing you're really dismissing is your own life. When you make truth a casualty in a culture, you end up with chaos. And that is precisely what is happening today. And with respect to Christianity, it is not true because it works. That's pragmatism. It's not true because it feels right. That's subjectivism. It's not true because it's my truth. That becomes relativism. Truth is true because it's anchored in the person and work of Jesus Christ, who is God, who is the North Star, who has set parameters around our lives so that our joy might be complete. So Christ is never a cosmic killjoy because he ushers in truth. He's one who allows us to experience life as it is intended to be experienced.
What type of approach should I give him? Because I'm pretty sure he might approach me today. How should I approach him and actually most likely get him to at least kind of choke and admit it, or, you know, catch him in the middle of his inconsistency? Because honestly, I think he was actually avoiding on purpose to actually confess that he's wrong.
Yeah, well, truth is anything that corresponds to reality. I think that needs to be pointed out, and therefore truth does not yield, as I said, to the size of the latest lobby group, nor is truth a mere matter of preference or opinion. Rather, truth is true even if everyone denies it, and a lie is a lie even if everyone affirms it. And you can point that out in a lot of common sense ways. 2 + 2 = 4. That's truth. If you say 2 + 2 = 5, or whatever you feel it equals, then you have chaos in mathematics, and that is the exact same thing that happens in culture. If you get rid of enduring truths, you cannot even live life in an acceptable fashion. If you say it's too narrow for a pilot to land his airplane on an airstrip that's designated, said, just land it wherever you want. Well, I mean, obviously you have chaos, and this is how we're trying to play fast and loose with truth in the culture. It is devastating to our own lives, but it's also devastating to civilization. If we make marriage a matter of preference as opposed to adhering to some absolute truth that has guided civilizations, we end up with chaos. And chaos for the most vulnerable among us. I mean, think about kids. We know sociologically, not spiritually alone, but sociologically, that kids are best served by gender-differentiated parenting. So you eliminate that, you put kids in harm's way. And so we have to take seriously truth. And where do you get truth? Well, we can establish the Bible as being an objective frame of reference. How? Because you can test it, just like you can test a scientific paradigm. You can test it to see if it holds up under scrutiny. Now, in the case of the Bible, you look at historical evidences. You look at the manuscript evidence. You look at archaeology. Do the people, the places, and the persons correspond to reality? You look at prophecies made in the Bible and see if they were fulfilled as prophesied. Biblical prophecies have their fulfillment in Scripture. So, for example, you can look at Daniel, who is prophesying 6 centuries before the birth of Jesus Christ and gives an unfolding of nations. Well, did it happen as he prophesied or didn't it? He wasn't writing in the 2nd century. He was writing in the 6th century. And yet he's telling us about exactly what would take place prophetically in the 2nd century. So now we have a way of figuring out, did it happen as he said, or did it not? So you can test the Bible to see if it is an objective framework of reference that we can adhere to with confidence. You got the same issue with the Quran. Does the Quran correspond to reality? Is it a safe haven for truth? And what you find when you look at it critically is that it is replete with not only factual errors, but replete with faulty ethics. You don't find that in Scripture. So truth makes all the difference in the world. Of course, what is truth? The very question that Pontius Pilate asked Jesus. In the irony of the ages, he was standing toe-to-toe with the personification of truth, and yet he missed its reality. And I think postmodern people are in much the same position. They stare at truth, but they fail to recognize its identity. Thank you so much for tuning in to this edition of the Bible Instrument Broadcast. We do what we do because life and truth really do matter.
Thank you for joining us for the Bible Answer Man broadcast. If you'd like more information about the Christian Research Institute or to order resources, just call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or visit equip.org where you can listen live or download archived broadcasts. Again, that's equip.org. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
In the new book, The Cross Before Me, Pastor Rankin Wilborn and philosopher Brian Greger offer a provocative perspective on why the cross is not just the way to salvation, but the way to the abundant life. Drawing on biblical truth and historical writings, they ask, why do we still feel restless when things seem to be going our way? How can suffering bring more peace than success brings? And what does Jesus' cross teach us about how to live a full and flourishing life? This unique book helps us reimagine the good life as we learn to delight in surrendering our own power and embracing the life-giving weakness of the cross. Be sure to read The Cross Before Me. To receive your copy, call 888-7000-CRI and support the life-changing work of the Christian Research Institute. That's 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.